Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. This is your host, Andrew Vitelli, senior editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in. Today on Crossroads, we have Derek Bentley, partner and head of energy transition at Solomon Partners. Derek, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Andrew.
So for our listeners who may not be familiar, can you tell me a little bit about Solomon Partners and where you're active within the energy sector?
Absolutely. Happy to. So Solomon Partners is one of the first boutique investment banks and has been around for over 35 years. And since 2016 has been affiliated with Natixis and their parent company, BPCE Group, which is one of the largest diversified banks in Europe and has a substantial retail banking presence. And the way that BPCE Group conducts its investment banking advisory services globally is through these types of boutique partnerships. And Solomon, well, generally North American focus, we work in very close collaboration with the Tixes and the other boutiques globally. Having worked at several other global advisory firms in my career, I'd say that the unique partnership model actually drives superior coordination and insight. And it's worth noting that Solomon is independently managed, but the combination with Natixis really optimally enables delivery of the thoughtfulness, insight, and focus of a boutique investment bank, but with the global proprietary financing capabilities and reach alongside that.
And Derek, you mentioned that you've worked for several global investment banks. What is your background and how long have you been at Solomon Partners?
I've been in the broader infrastructure space for over 25 years. I've done project development, principal investing, and then obviously advisory that I'm doing now as well. And as you mentioned, I lead energy transition advisory for Solomon. And while the remit is quite broad, there's definitely an infrastructure skew towards renewables and energy storage in particular, but also encompasses broader renewable fuels, carbon capture, clean hydrogen, EV charging, to name a few. And I came over to Solomon about a year ago and was previously at Nomura Green Tech, where I started and led the global low carbon infrastructure advisory practice, which was the largest and most active coverage segment within that organization. So Nomura Green Tech was, or I guess still is, the largest energy transition sustainability oriented investment bank globally. And prior to that, I was at both Merrill Lynch and Bank of America in the Energy and Power Group, and then spent the first third or so of my career actually doing project development, initially in the water sector, but then broadening into a bit of conventional power and midstream as well.
So do you think that experience working directly in development is valuable now when you're advising clients? Do you think that gives you a little bit of an insight that maybe some bankers who have only been on the investment banking side don't have?
Absolutely. I've been told that repeatedly. It just gives a true appreciation of what many of our clients are going through, the inherent understanding or better appreciation for the challenges, but also the ability to also better articulate their stories.
Well, that's very interesting. And speaking of challenges, it is certainly an interesting time to be in the energy transition. Obviously, we have a new administration that is probably changing a little bit about what people think of when they think of energy transition. I just have to ask, how has your job, how has your role changed since President Trump's election and since all the changes to energy policy that have gone along with that have started to come into effect?
That's a great question. And I'd say, yeah, absolutely, a lot has changed, but both positive and negative. And as you probably imagine, most of the talk and action really has been around tariffs, which not only impact energy transition, but also the broader economy. And the approach of the administration has introduced a significant amount of uncertainty for a wide spectrum of businesses, making strategic planning, supply chain management and other aspects, really hard to predict and navigate, and what that's done and is it's created probably a natural slowdown in M&A activity. And you know, according to our M&A group, and I think I saw something in Reuters as well, saying that the year-to-date M&A activity has actually been the lowest that has been in over 20 years. But I would say overall, we continue to remain quite optimistic that there's going to be a robust M&A environment, which you perhaps should talk about a bit separately or later on in this conversation. But you know, with the tariffs, yeah, it has had an impact on businesses, introduces more uncertainty, especially around PPA pricing. But a clear positive for the sector has been the substantial amount of load growth coming namely from AI and cloud computing. And this trend's not a result of the Trump administration per se, but one that's continued to gain momentum, become more and more tangible as people start to unearth partnerships and other ways to get power to these data centers that are going to be a critical part of the overall U.S. economy. And so with that, you know, specifically with energy transition, say that with renewable energy really is the most viable and near-term available solution at scale to meeting that demand that we have. And so therefore, it's a very favorable midterm, near to midterm environment for renewable energy, just solely as a result of that.
Yeah. When you talk about the shift over the last 6 months, it only tells part of the story. You really have to go 18 months back at least to look at the way that the AI revolution and the shifting changes around how we are looking at the power needs have really changed the industry. And I think last year there was maybe some debate within renewables, well, is this good or not? Because the idea of a transition where we phase out conventional power and replace it with renewables seemed a little bit outdated when you needed so much additional power. Now, as you mentioned, now that you have a new administration who wouldn't have been favorable to that philosophy in the first place, it does seem like it's a little bit of a saving grace because you need all this power. And people in the renewables industry will say, hey, listen, you could forget about the fact that it's green if you want. The bottom line is we need this power with all this load growth coming on. We are the industry that is able to bring that power now and not 5 years, 10 years down the line, as might be the case with gas and nuclear. I think, as you mentioned, it really does seem like the AI revolution is a little bit of a saving grace for renewable developers.
Yeah, completely agree. And look, we are going to see new natural gas, and honestly, we need more to ensure robust grid reliability. But in near term, I think a lot of that new natural gas is really going to come from some project expansions and retrofits. There are some projects that had already been in the queue and that are being built, but really to build new natural gas at scale, it's going to take you 5 to 7 years for a new large project to come online, just considering the turbine lead times and also the construction time. So it's a very favorable environment for renewables from that perspective, which account for, I think, 95% of queue positions.
I mean, you mentioned the slowdown in M&A. You mentioned all the uncertainty. At the same time, you are still working with clients and trying to get deals done. How are you advising clients given this uncertain and kind of tumultuous environment?
Yeah, it's a great question, too. And I'd say it continues to change by the day. But one overarching consistency is not to launch a capital raise or sale process with the current market backdrop. To wait until some of the dust settles, because we are confident there's going to be a robust M&A environment. And President Trump, at his heart, is a deal guy. And you look at some of the market's initial reaction when he took office, there was an expectation of really significant, if not record, M&A. And so I think that is still his plan, though there's definitely some shakeups that he is implementing to get some of his policy initiatives across. But we're confident that there is going to be a robust backdrop once some of this uncertainty dies away. And, you know, we talked about the load growth and the favorability for renewables. Yeah, absolutely. But even when you look at the macro picture, it still remains quite robust as well. Though, you know, obviously, there is some risk depending on how long the policy uncertainty persists. But GDP, productivity, unemployment all continue to be very strong, right? Inflation remains low. Debt markets have continued to be robust, and there's over $2 trillion of funding capital available for investment, which is still near record levels. So there's quite a bit of pent-up demand when things settle. We tell our clients, say, you know, you want to be early, be ready to go when the window opens and the opportunity presents itself.
But Derek, you talk about the tariffs, and certainly those have presented challenges across the board. But when you zero in on renewables as an industry, there's also been a lot of seeming policy hostility that's specific to this industry. Even in the past week, you had the AD/CVD duties that were ruled on that are going to make it a lot more expensive or difficult to import solar panels from Southeast Asia. And you had the Equinor project, the offshore wind project, that was basically halted by an order from the Bureau of Ocean Management. There's a lot of concern that parts of the IRA could be gutted or could at least be affected in a tax reconciliation bill. I think you're right to say that overall the economy is going to settle down when there's some predictability, but is there a threat that things could get worse for renewables in the latter part of this year?
I would say there's always a possibility, but with those instances in particular that you mentioned, so AD/CVD in Southeast Asia, that was largely expected. Right? That level of scrutiny has existed for a while, and companies had already started to modify their supply chains. It's also another data point for supporting domestic manufacturing, which most of the large panel manufacturers have already started to do and switch their businesses. So that is less of an overall impact. With Empire Wind, it'll be interesting to see how this ultimately plays out. And it's going to go to the courts, and we'll see what the ultimate determination is. But it could raise a pretty significant, really material concern if a precedent does start to get set around policy changes, whether it's permitting, subsidies, et cetera, retroactively changing based off of an administration. And so, while yes, this does impact, in particular, Empire Wind and offshore wind, the implications can really reverberate through all segments of the economy. And so I'm confident that at the end of the day, that the precedent will not get set, though it's obviously concerning.
If you look at the Equinor case, it seems like that has implications potentially even beyond renewables. If the standard becomes that when there's a change in administration, if there's a controversial project, even that's kind of far along financed and everything, the new administration will or might pull the plug. I think that's going to have far-reaching effects. So that's something we're following closely, and it'll be interesting to see what happened there, as you mentioned. Now, you talked about a lot of the challenges, and I think where there's uncertainty, there could also be opportunity. Are you seeing areas of opportunity in today's investment climate?
Absolutely. And I would say there are a few specific areas. One, project development and potential acquisitions there. And right now, we've continued to see an increase in the cost and the timeline for project development pertaining to interconnect, et cetera. And I think what that could do, the longer this period of uncertainty that exists, is it could create some potential distress where some of the smaller or medium-sized, less well-capitalized companies must go and pursue monetization options. So I think you will see a lot of early mid-stage projects starting to change hands. In a capital-intensive industry, also you're going to see more of a shift to companies trying to raise capital through the sale of de-risked projects. And so what I would say by those, that's more under construction and operating projects, though, you know, just as we were talking about with Equinor and Empire Wind, there is increasing uncertainty as to whether those projects are truly de-risked, but we are seeing a lot of activity where companies are looking to recycle capital from those de-risked events that will enable them to continue to grow and expand their business as we continue to have high interest rates and they want to raise more cost-effective capital to optimize their businesses. I think also in times like this, it's becoming evident that scale is extremely critical and creates significant strategic advantages. And so I think you will also start to see more consolidation of even companies in this space, developers, IPPs that own assets. I think you'll see a level of consolidation that starts to occur. And then in terms of specific industries or subsectors, I would say distributed generation. You're going to continue to see more and more activity there. There's a lot of increased investor interest that's starting in that space as it's driven more by state level policies rather than federal. And are also competing generally against retail rates rather than wholesale. And the projects, they're smaller and therefore quicker to build. And so it's easier to react to some of these market-based changes that we've talked about. And you've also got higher margins, higher profit margins, or developer fees. And so there's better inherent ability to absorb changes. And the last factor I'd say on that industry as to why we see increased interest is that we're actually starting to see several companies that have proven their ability to scale. And that was something that many investors, including the largest ones, had really struggled to find. And they weren't sure, it raised a natural question for them as to whether it was even possible to create substantial scale or attractive scale and profitability in the sector. And so there are multiple companies out there that fall in that category.
We're definitely seeing a lot of interest and a lot of activity within distributed generation. You mentioned some of the advantages that it has in this market. Another thing is it's relatively quicker development time. So if you're looking at long-term, uncertainty, I guess when you have projects that take a year, 2 years to build, then there's less that could go wrong, less that could change in that time than projects with that might take 3 or 4 years. It's a little bit of a reversal from maybe the philosophy of the past, which would be, hey, we're going to sign a PPA at a certain price. And then by the time we're actually building the project a few years from now, our prices will have gone down significantly and that'll be our profit. It seems like that trend has reversed to the benefit now of DG.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Any other sectors that you think are relatively well positioned to benefit from this environment?
I would say the ones we talked about are the main ones now: onshore renewables, distributed generation, energy storage as well. But I think some of the others you'd mentioned, the IRA. Yeah, there is still some level of uncertainty as to what's going to happen with the IRA and some of the segments that are a bit more on the fringe, such as clean hydrogen, carbon capture, even. While there is a lot of Republican support, there's still remain questionable in terms of just where things will shake out when budget reconciliation and the IRA ultimately gets finalized.
Yeah, I think that definitely is still one of the main concerns that's hanging over the industry. So we've talked a lot about the challenges and the restrictions and how it is slowing down the M&A market. But Derek, how are deals getting done now? How are deals getting done in this environment?
Yeah, I mean, deals are absolutely still getting done. There have been a number of transactions that are just taking a bit longer, right, as people try to navigate all of this uncertainty. But there is still a lot of conviction around the market, the fundamental trends and outlook for renewables and energy transition. And therefore, companies are still making large M&A or large acquisitions. And you can point to Brookfield acquiring National Grid Renewables as one of those. Obviously, Brookfield's an experienced renewables investor. And you know, they did have that long-term conviction. And the National Grid platform was differentiated. And so, therefore, there was good in investor interest. And that was a $1.7 billion check. So we're still seeing transactions get done for sure, but there has been a general slowdown.
But when you get to the question of how, I mean, are there contingencies being put in for policy changes? Is there risk shifting? Is anything like that going on?
Yeah, there is to some extent. You'll see some earn-out-oriented structures. You will see some change of law risk, especially around project-level M&A transactions. And so, yes, there has been an increased occurrence of those types of caveats.
Well, very interesting. And Derek, you said that you think that the M&A market will pick up. I certainly hope for your right. I hope that we have plenty to write about in the latter part of this year, and you have plenty to work on. So let's hope you're right about that prediction.
Yeah, we're pretty confident in it for sure. But I appreciate that, Andrew. You guys do a great job.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it, Derek. And thank you again for joining the program.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on here.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Crossroads. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. And please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.